Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. He's also the author of The Weed Agency, which officially was released yesterday. I finished the book last night. It's a fantastic read, so please be sure to pre-order. I guess now you just order a copy of The Weed Agency. You can also pick it up now in your traditional bookstores. Jim, regular three martinis today, good, bad, and crazy. The good, certainly from the perspective of conservatives, not so much from the president, is a new CNN poll where the president is deeply underwater on pretty much every major issue. On the economy, 61% disapprove, only 38% approve. Healthcare, 63% disapprove, 36% approve. Foreign affairs, 57% disapprove, 40% approve. Helping the middle class, 58% disapprove, 40% approve. On the VA, it's 58% disapprove, 37% approve. And on Ukraine, 53% disapprove, 38% approve. Jim, those aren't just bad numbers. Those are horrible numbers, which show us that the public just doesn't trust this administration anymore, except for the 36 to 37% that will apparently back him up no matter what he does.
Yeah, this certainly seems to be his floor. The good news is this is all before the Bergdahl deal, so I'm sure that'll help, right, Greg? What kind of jumps out about this morning, Ben Domenech, who's I like to call the guy who writes that other newsletter, and it's a pretty good one. It's easily the second best one out there, wrote a piece called The Failed Presidency. And it's increasingly becoming clear that unless you're a Yes We Can Obama fan who thinks he's doing a good job on the economy and healthcare, foreign affairs, the VA and Ukraine, that people are really going to ask, what are the success stories? The stimulus, you know, the economy shrunk last cycle. The workforce keeps shrinking. Obviously, Obamacare is a mess, even though we keep being told Democrats are going to run on it. A couple things jump out. The first, this poll, what it reflects is that Obama, the entire competence narrative is gone. He's just not that good at this job. And what it really stems from is the government operates kind of on its own and problems occur. He's oblivious to them. We've seen this pattern in which he says, I learned about it from the media. So, I mean, when he tells Americans, hey, go use healthcare.gov to buy health insurance, and, you know, it doesn't work. And he goes out for several days telling people to use something that doesn't work. And then he says, I had no idea. I'm only the president. How was I supposed to know this thing doesn't work? And then you see the VA scandal in which, you know, like Americans, you know, there was a recent poll that said, do you think this is a serious issue? And 98% of respondents said it was a serious issue. You almost never see that in polling, although you do kind of wonder about the 2%. Who are thinking VA is, you know, that vegetable drink and they don't understand what all the controversy is about or something like that. Basically, everybody agrees this, and Obama's played the same playbook. I had no idea there were problems over there. You know, I always said veterans are a priority, but I've been totally out of the loop on this thing, and we'll fix it, we promise. And now this case with the Bergdahl one, in which basically it sounds like almost everybody in the Army knew all of the nitty-gritty Bergdahl details. You know, can we all be glad that he's back in U.S. hands so he can be held accountable for anything he may or may not have done? Sure. But five terrorists is a very high price to pay. And the thought that we've already had, you know, six, some are saying eight, some are saying 14 guys die while looking for this guy. And then to hold this ludicrous White House ceremony saluting him as a hero and send Susan Rice out to the Sunday shows again. This is a comically incompetent administration. Chuck Hagel came out and said the reason we had to do this was because of Bergdahl's failing health. And then this morning, the Taliban shows out this video in which he looks okay as he gets onto the helicopter. So, you know, the administration just lies constantly and has really reached the point where the Ron Fourniers of the world can't ignore it anymore. I think we're really seeing the wheels come off the bus and this administration unraveling. And as we see kind of in this poll number, they are now down to their core supporters, because anybody else who just can look at this and isn't completely emotionally invested in the notion that Obama is a successful president looks around at these things and says, wow, these are serious failures of governing, never mind the communications and campaigning and spin aspects of this.
Well, you mentioned the latest in the Bergdahl scenario. And as you mentioned, there are some reports that it's as high as 14 Americans who were killed in the efforts to locate him after he deserted his unit. That's the other thing that's happened. I've almost lost count now, Jim, of the number of his former platoon mates who have come on, and they are all telling the exact same story very definitively, that he was a deserter. And it appears that was the Pentagon's conclusion years ago. So whether there'll be congressional hearings on this, who knows? You've got Dianne Feinstein saying the president broke the law, not telling them about the Taliban figures to be released. A bunch of different Democrats are distancing themselves from the president on this. So what's the White House reaction? Well, Here's Chuck Todd talking with Matt Lauer. Chuck Todd's over in Europe with the president.
They expected there to be controversy involving the decision to release five members of the Taliban from Gitmo and the fact that this would then escalate that debate, which, of course, has been simmering for a good 5 years, which is what to do with those detainees. How do you release them? Where do you release them? They did not expect this backlash on Bergdahl himself. I've had a few aides describe it to me as we didn't know that they were going to swift boat Bergdahl. And Matt, of course, that's a reference to that political fight back in 2004 over John Kerry's military service.
Right. Would you know well, Jim, and you got Van Jones on CNN and others saying this was a preordained, orchestrated smear campaign. So, Jim, we can't possibly impugn the motives of the man who is believed to have deserted his unit, but obviously all the other members of his platoon are of a completely low character who can't be trusted whatsoever.
Well, to give them a small molecule of credit, Greg, we should point out that the swift boat vets were in fact telling the truth. So technically, yeah, they are. They're telling the truth about his record. A couple things jump out about this. The first is this is a very predictable White House strategy. Remember the tax records of Joe the Plumber getting released really quickly?
Yes.
Things like that by that state employee. All completely illegal, all violating both policy and law and privacy, you know, regulations and things like that. These guys are going to get audited. I mean, and the spin of the Democratic folks this morning is, well, we don't want to have a rush to judgment. This guy is getting tried in the public eye. Whatever happened to innocent until proven guilty? That can be a valid point, but there's two things to keep in mind. One is that we know some elements of this story are true because we know he disappeared. And we know that unlike what Susan Rice said, he wasn't taken from the battlefield. It wasn't that, you know, he was in a fight and he got separated from the rest of his guys and the, you know, Taliban nabbed him. It's very clear he left his post. Right, and that's desertion, pretty much. I mean, unless there's some sort of, you know, other completely unknown explanation here, you know, this looks pretty clear. Two, I went down and I counted. There are six guys who have come forward who are all basically telling the same story of no, this guy basically made clear he didn't want to be there. He was anti-American. We have the emails back to the parent as supporting evidence. There's a good portion of circumstantial evidence pointing to a narrative of Bergdahl leaving his post, vehemently turning against the mission in Afghanistan, seeking out the Taliban, and if the Taliban is correct, they're claiming that he helped them with, you know, bomb assembling and ambushing the Americans and things like that. If nothing else, his decision to desert his post and go missing required the military to start launching all those rescue operations and search operations, and that put people in danger, and they ended up coming under fire, and up to, you know, 6, 8, or 14 guys died, depending on whose account you believe. I also noticed that no one who served with Bergdahl has come forward and said, no, he was a great guy. He was a loyal American. The administration is insisting, don't prejudge, except we've got nothing else to judge him on. And I, for one, have a very hard time believing that these six, you know, U.S. soldiers all decided to get together and let's smear Bergdahl. These guys know the risk of coming forward and the idea that they're going to get attacked by friends of the administration. So if they're going to willing to do, come forward and do that, it must be something pretty darn important to them. And there are other lots of indicators, like apparently that Chuck Hagel announced this to troops in Afghanistan this weekend, and the room was silent. Meaning that if you talk to the, you know, look at the military Facebook boards and chat boards and stuff like that, in the military, it sounds like almost everybody knew that this guy was by no means an American hero, by no means serving with honor and distinction, as Susan Rice claimed. And in fact, somebody they saw as a deserter, as, you know, as one guy put it, as a deserter at best and a traitor at worst. And so, great, we may have traded five senior Taliban commanders in exchange for a traitor.
On to the crazy martini now, Jim, and on it's still important, but lighter fare than that, certainly. It was a major primary day in several states around the country. A lot of primaries for U.S. Senate nominations that folks on the right were watching. Surprisingly easy victory for Joni Ernst in Iowa. So if you've ever castrated hogs, make sure you put that on your resume when you run for office, because that definitely put her on the radar screen for a lot of people. Impressive performance by Steve Daines out in Montana. Got 84% of the vote in a three-way race for the nomination. Most eyes, however, were on Mississippi, a three-way race for the Republican nomination involving longtime Senator Thad Cochran, Tea Party favorite Chris McDaniel, and a very minimal third candidate for the Republican nomination, who turned out to be a crucial candidate for the Republican nomination. He only got 1.6% of the vote, yet that's enough to prevent either Cochran or McDaniel. They're still counting votes down there, and it's super close, less than 1,000 votes at last check. Neither one of them is going to get to 50%, which means we've got to have this bloody runoff again in 3 weeks in Mississippi, and this has already been an exceedingly ugly race. So more resources, more bad blood going to be festering there for at least 3 more weeks in Mississippi.
Hope you like attack ads, Mississippi, because you're going to get 3 more weeks of, you know what? Just DVR everything. Mississippi television viewers and just skip through the commercial breaks because, man, that's going to be unpleasant for the next 3 weeks. Other Republicans and conservatives will think differently, but I see this as, at the very least, two very flawed choices down in Mississippi. Thad Cochran is a elderly gentleman. He's fairly conservative, but he governs like an appropriator. You know, he's always been fine with spending when it's coming back to his district. I think perhaps most disturbing is, look, you know, he's, like I said, he's getting up in years. Molly Ball, I think it was The Atlantic, basically said that she met him early during one of the, you know, a day last week, and then later in the day had to be reintroduced to him, suggesting that the senator's memory is not what it once was. And you got to wonder, is this somebody who, you know, really is up to the task of being a senator for another 6 years? The flip side of that is that Chris McDaniel has, certainly he's got nut job supporters who like to break into Mrs. Cochran's nursing home. Some controversial comments in his past by McDaniel that are probably going to get thrown his way. It's one thing for some, you know, snotty blogger like myself to talk about Cochran's age. McDaniel has made some of his comments in that age that some people kind of see as just not being respectful and below the belt. So there you go, Mississippi. There's your choice. McDaniel, by finishing ahead in the primary, is probably the favorite for the runoff. If you're an incumbent and you've come in second in a runoff, you very rarely see a surge of support and excitement. If you're a McDaniel supporter, you're feeling really good. You got to, you know, you already technically beat him once. Now you just got to beat him again. Democrats think they're going to make a race of this if McDaniel is the nominee with Travis Childers. You know, it's conceivable. It is still Mississippi, a deeply Republican state, and I think Democrats may be overestimating their chances. But we got to see what happens. Check out the polling, see how it looks. Just, you know, like this has been a generally pretty easygoing cycle for Republicans. And it looks like Mississippi is going to be the one stubbing of the toe that might really complicate some of their efforts to take back the Senate.
Childers was a relatively conservative Democrat. But, you know, if the balance of power in the Senate's on the line, all you got to do is whoever the nominee is, throw a picture of Childers up there with Harry Reid. And that should take care of that. The voting yesterday, both Cochran and McDaniel each got more votes than the entire Democratic field combined, which was not very competitive. So I'm not sure that's the best comparison, but clearly there seems to be more enthusiasm on the right, regardless of who wins. And there's, what, 4 months to heal, at least to some extent, between the two sides, whoever wins on June 24th. But keeping them away from each other for a little while, I guess.
Yeah, this is one we're going to have to watch. I have a hard time seeing everybody uniting and hugging it out after the runoff election night.
All right, Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Don't forget to order the Weed Agency. We'll be back tomorrow for the Thursday edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.